Good morning and wake up HCC. Although I thought we were going to change the name, weren't we? We were going to just call it HOCO Live.
I guess we could start doing that transition. We could say good HOCO morning.
There you That'd go. Good HOCO morning. Yeah. We are live here in the studio of Dragon Digital Radio, basement of McEwen Hall. We kind of took a break there for a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit. We went on a hiatus.
I do have to say that it was I don't think it was by choice.
No.
But we are back, and that's what matters. And we are here this beautiful Monday, hot Monday morning. It's going to be, from what I heard, 106 degrees today.
Can't wait.
So, Brandon is excited. And this morning, we have a special guest in our studio. We're going to be learning more about this program that I feel is very unique. It's called the Roving Radish. And we have James Soller here. He's the agricultural coordinator for the program. Good morning and welcome.
Morning. How are you?
Good, good, good. And, you know, I told you before we went on air, the way that I found out about your program is because I was looking for volunteer opportunities for my children.
Right.
And that's one of the unique components already of the program without really talking about it yet, right? We haven't
that's
even
right.
started, and we're already like, wait, kids can volunteer? Like, I want to hear more about that, right? But before we go into all of the details about the Roving Radish, I always like to get to know my guests. I always like to get to find out. I think it's so interesting to find out a little bit of the history of how did you become, you know, who you are today and the program that you're running today.
Sure.
So if you can tell us a little bit about who James is and
sure.
how
Have
he became.
Have you always had a passion for radishes?
No, I really haven't, actually. No.
Is it your favorite vegetable?
It really isn't, actually. It isn't.
So tell us more. Tell us more about yourself.
So I've grown up in Howard County my whole life. Left here for 4 years to go to college. I went to Virginia Tech College. My grandfather actually bought a farm here in 1936.
Oh, wow. Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. So we still live there. My family lives there. I live next to my parents, and my aunt and uncle live next door as well. So
that's great.
And my grandparents before that lived next door too. So it's a little family compound.
That's really cool. Like a whole little,
yeah,
just a little family territory there.
Yeah, it was pretty unique. My grandfather actually wasn't a farmer per se. He loved farming. He was a canned food broker. His father had a canned food brokerage, and he dealt with a lot of farms buying vegetables to can or to preserve. So he fell in love with farming and then moved from Tent Hills outside of Baltimore City to the farm in 1936. And my dad pretty embraced it. It was a dairy farm. We raised beef when I was younger. Now we have a little bit of sheep, pigs, chickens, things like that. Nothing too crazy, but we do still have 75 acres here, so it's nice.
That is nice, because I know you guys have seen then the whole evolution of farming here in Howard County, and from those who know about farming, we've talked to a couple of different people. They say that it's kind of like going away, and there's almost like fear, I think, in the farming community that it's just disappearing locally.
Yeah, it's changed, and we have a unique it's a unique area we're in because of where we lie between Baltimore and Washington, which makes the cost of our land very expensive. Even if it's in preservation, it holds a higher value than maybe agricultural land in somewhere else. Mm. So it creates a different set of challenges for our farmers here. And like the dairy industry on a whole is down, and especially in Howard County, we have one really dairy left. But that's kind of what has been a great thing to have this job, because it has so many challenges. That's what makes it fun.
Right.
And before this, I did, after I graduated college, I worked in marketing for a construction company. And I also did a lot of stone work and side work. So I started a business.
You went both ends, agricultural.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So then I did that for a while. And then I really wanted to get back to agriculture. And at the time, Kathy Johnson at the EDA, they were, in 2014, looking at ways to promote healthy eating, support local farms. We were looking at all these ideas.
Yeah.
And that's where the Roving Radish came up. And I thought I really wanted to come back to our farm a little bit more and also work for the county in developing the Roving Radish. So it was a neat experience.
So you just mentioned the three main points of it. Promote healthy eating, support local farms, and connect our community.
Correct.
Right?
Yep, that's it.
Those are like the three main points of the Rub and Radish. So why don't we just go and dive right in and talk about what the Rub and Radish is.
Sure. So the Rub and Radish is a meal kit program. It was kind of ahead of its time. So in 2014, they came up with this idea to create easy-to-make, affordable meal kits for everybody in the community that are healthy. So we make these meal kits from local produce, creating another market for our farms, which is great. We try to make it as easy as possible by chopping, measuring. Everything's in your bag. Your meat's there. You do have to cook it, but it's a way for people to get back to cooking and not feel intimidated by it. We also...
I'm guilty of that.
Oh, we all are. I mean, we're all busy, and that's a target audience, right?
Yeah.
Families that are running around crazy.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, you always think that you don't have time, right? Like, I have two kids, and I'm always running between practices and school. Summertime's a little bit... And even then, I mean, they were doing swimming, and so it's like swimming camp and then swimming again. And so it's like, when do you have the time to cook? It's so much faster and so much easier, right, in our minds to just grab something on the go, wherever.
Sure it is,
Instead of prepping for
it's
the
a
week,
planning too,
right?
So it takes that element out of it. We also allow customers to order our meal kits up to Sunday at midnight for Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday of that week. Wow. Which is very hard to manage that, but we found the later we can push it, most families that we're talking about, they plan on that weekend. So if we pushed it back a week, which would make our lives easier, we would actually have less people participate, and that's not the goal.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So we use historical data to figure out our numbers, which is pretty neat.
So you're doing all this and running a farm, too.
Well, yes. This is primarily what I do now.
Okay.
And so I do this. I also I work out of the Office of Community Sustainability. So I do this. We have HOCO Fresh, which is a program I run. HOCOfarms.com, which is a website. We have the Agricultural Preservation Board that I run, and then I do some policy things for the county executive. So I'm busy.
Yeah.
But I do. We do still run our farm as well. My dad and I'll help with that as well.
You wear many hats.
Yeah, that makes it fun, though.
Yeah.
It makes it fun.
So you were saying that you guys were looking of a way to incorporate, you know, like we said, healthy eating, local farms, and connecting the community. How is the Rub and Radish doing that? Let's start with the healthy eating. How is the program promoting healthy eating?
So, well, we have certain criteria, actually, was set by the what was it called now? Now I'm going to have a mind block. But anyway, Howard County Health Department figured out and helped with us on figuring out some healthy guidelines for it. So it has certain fat, sodium criteria that we stick to.
Mm.
We also are lucky, our partners with Horizon Foundation, they were a big supporter when we started.
Absolutely.
Still are.
Mm-hmm.
Hospital as well, they're great. Howard County Hospital, as well as United Way in the beginning, helped us start everything.
Okay.
And they helped gear us towards the healthy eating and think about that. We also, every year we search out recipes that are easy to make, taste good, fit those health criteria, and also fit the growing season of our farmers. So it's a challenge, but it's fun.
So let's talk about the recipes themselves, because you guys are putting meal kits together that people have to go home and cook. Are you providing with all of the ingredients, majority of the ingredients, and is there the recipe that actually comes, like the tag there that says, you know, this follow this steps and you'll have a full meal if you just use what we're giving, plus maybe, I don't know, water, milk, or, you know,
correct,
little things
that's
like that?
That's it. So you get your recipe, and they're online, so you can see them before. The nice thing about the program is when you order, you don't have to order, like, subscribe to a whole season. You can order one meal and stop, which is great. And again, we want everybody to participate in it.
Right.
If they feel like they have to order 10 weeks, they may not.
Yeah.
So on that list, it'll tell you on that recipe, it'll star items that we don't include.
Mm.
Typical items that we would include, like oil. Most people have oil, salt and pepper. Anything out of the ordinary liquid-wise, like cider vinegars and stuff, we will include. Beef stock, stuff like that we'll include.
Okay.
So the majority of it really is included.
Okay. And are these personal meals or these family meals?
They're based on a family of four.
Okay.
So each dinner is for a family of four. We have a standard option, which has two dinners for a family of four, and a vegetarian option with two dinners for a family of four. Mm-hmm. They're not like, so each week it's not like we just take the protein out of it and make it vegetarian. They're actually completely different recipes. So a family actually could buy both kits and have four meals for the week, which actually a lot of people do that.
And that actually sounds very interesting, because I know that, you know, the more that we learn about our health, even those of us who are not fully vegetarian try to eat more consciously and reduce the amount of meat that we, sure. you know, consume, even though we're not turning.
Right. And hey, there's a lot of people doing that. Yeah.
Right. I mean, because it's habits that we have, right? And some of those are harder to break than others. And I am guilty of that. Meat eating is one that I've considered, that I've looked at, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this seems so difficult. But yet I do try to incorporate days of my week where I don't eat any meat whatsoever, just so that I can take better care of myself and at the same time help the planet as well and preserve, you know, the animal lives as well. Now, we talked about supporting local farms, and even though it seems a little bit obvious, how is this helping? How is this incorporating and supporting local farming?
So what its real benefit to our local farms is that they have a market that they can kind of depend on to a certain degree. So every year we have a list of produce and meats and things that are needed. We send out each week on Tuesday. I send out, hey, this is what I need this week, guys, to the farmers. And they kick back what they have available. The nice thing is, especially with our Howard County farms, the size of our farms aren't as big as maybe Midwest or even the Eastern Shore. So the economy of scale, they actually have to sell their produce for more than what guys with a bigger operation could.
Yeah.
Which makes sense when you think it's simple business.
Right.
So they're okay selling at our farmers markets. We've all gone there and bought something and said, hey, I can get this grocery store cheaper.
Right.
Well, you can, but the difference is it costs our farmers here a little bit more than what somebody on a grand scale is growing them.
Yeah.
So if our farmers, when they have an excess, have to sell to a wholesale, a lot of times they would actually lose money when they do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we come in. We're kind of or the middle ground there. So we're like that point where we can allow them to expand so they can look at it and say, hey, I might grow a little more tomatoes this year. I can sell them at the farmers markets. But the good thing is, if I don't sell as many as I'm expecting, I can grow that market. But when I do have extra, I have another market.
Oh, that's great.
So it's pretty beneficial for our farms. And I think they've seen the farms that we deal with really, really have enjoyed it.
And if there are any farmers out there listening to us and they're like, you know, I haven't heard about this program and I'm not participating yet, and they want to start getting involved with it, is there time? How do they do that? Who do they contact?
It's very, very simple. They can email me at jzoller@howardcountymd.gov. And it's simple that we put them on our list. We send it out. Our priority is to Howard County Farms first, and then Maryland. It is a Howard County government program, so our goal is to support those guys first. But we spread it around then amongst the farms, so it's really easy to get involved with.
Sounds great. Now, connect our community. That was the third point, right, that's kind of like driving the Robin Radish. How are you guys doing that? How are you guys connecting the community?
So that's really evolved over time. It's a little different every year.
Okay.
When we started in 2014, we had a really interesting way of doing things. We actually used a detention center kitchen. So we used inmates for chopping and measuring. They did a great job. We were very, very fortunate to have a partnership with them, because without them in the beginning, we wouldn't have started. They took a lot of the brunt of the work for us. But what happened is we outgrew that kitchen that first year. So they said, okay, it's too much there. So we were really lucky that the Howard County Public School System had an abandoned school they weren't using, or they used for storage, the old Bushy Park Elementary School. They said, sure, you can use the kitchen. We renovated it some. They've been great. We get to use that kitchen free of cost, which allows us to do what we do now.
Right.
So once we move there, we have lots and lots of volunteers, which we talked about. We also do the longest table. We provide salads for. We do lots of marketing events. Anytime we can connect with kids, we have on our Facebook, and we'll feature farmers at times. We'll feature farm events. So it really is connecting our community to the agriculture community is our goal.
It's like taking us back to earth almost.
Right, sure.
Yeah, which is nice. And I know you mentioned kids. And when we first started the conversation, I said I found you guys because I was looking for volunteer opportunities for kids. How is the program getting the kids involved, and why? Why is it important to get the kids involved?
Well, it's very important to get kids involved, because a lot of our kids are removed from farming and agriculture, as well as their parents.
Right.
So just by simply getting them involved in seeing what farms do and what produce is like when it comes right from a farm, that's important. It's also important, I know my kids volunteer there, it's important for them to feel a sense of community and know they're helping people. So we sell the kits at a standard price for $38, but we also subsidize them for those in need for $18.
$18 for two meals of four people.
Right. You know? So it's a great deal.
It's a really great price. I mean, and $38 is really not bad for, you know, two meals for a family of four. It's really a good price.
Right. And that's the goal was to make it so it's a balance, because we have to make a little bit of money to cover the subsidies. But it was to make it affordable for everybody. Mm-hmm. So I think the kids being part of that, it gives them good work ethic. We work with also work with special needs, retired people, people in rehabilitation. It's kind of a very eclectic group of volunteers, which makes it fun and I think rewarding for everybody there.
So if somebody's listening and is looking for volunteer opportunities and wants to sign up, can you tell us a little more about the different shifts and how that works and maybe some of the things that they'll be doing when they volunteer?
Sure, sure. So we do Mondays and Tuesdays. We have an 8:30 to noon shift and 12:30 to 4. And then on Tuesdays, we do 9 to 1.
On Wednesdays.
Wednesdays, I'm sorry. Yes. And then Tuesdays, right, is the same as Mondays. So it's very simple to sign up. You go to hocovolunteers.org. You sign up. What you would be doing there, it could be any of the following. You could be measuring stuff. You could be chopping vegetables. You could be packaging meat, which is already frozen, but putting them in bags. You could be cleaning. It runs the gamut of things that you would do in a kitchen.
That's great. And so let's talk about the recipes, because you said that they can be found online and that they're all different. And how do you guys come up with this? Is there like do you guys have like chefs involved in the program that help you come up with it, or how does that work?
So we actually don't. We have a great kitchen manager, Terry Feldhaus, that did a lot of work, especially on the vegetarian. But over the years, we've had Terry, myself, anybody we can actually recruit. We had a dietitian help us 1 year.
That's fantastic.
As well, to develop the recipes. It's tricky because we have to look at cost, growing seasons, and then the health needs. So it has to be relatively easy to cook. Mm-hmm. So we try to look at all these things, but that's how we've gotten them offline, to be honest with you, and tweaked them.
Okay.
We'll go online and say we're looking, most of the time, say we're looking for zucchini.
Yeah.
We'll look up zucchini recipes online, and then we filter through those, and that's how we do it.
Have you had any feedback, like, you know, favorite recipes from people or things like that?
We do, and really, sometimes you don't even need feedback. You just see who doesn't order it, right? Yeah. But summer's always different too, because summer our number always goes down because of vacations.
Right.
But yes, we do have some favorites.
So this is not just a summer program. This is a program that runs longer than the summer.
Yes, correct. It goes May to November. Yes.
May through November. And you said people do not need to register. They do not need to sign up. They can just go and look up the recipes of the week and then order their kits.
Yes.
And when they order it, do they come to pick them up somewhere? Do you guys deliver? How does that process work?
So it's very easy. Once they get online, they'll register themselves. If they qualify for subsidy, that's something important as well. It's very easy to do that. They just get on there and select what qualifies them. There's a list of qualifications. That's it. We reserve the right to look at paperwork, but that's all you need to do to start out and get the subsidized price. Then you select where you want to pick up. We have right now 8 locations throughout the county.
That's great.
On Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays. Typically, they're 3:30 to 5 or 5:30 to 7 is what the time. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So you just put your order in, pick it up. And cook and get ready to cook.
That's it. You select where you're going to pick up and pick it up. Right. Yeah, it's very easy.
It sounds very, very easy. Now, we talked before we went on air about the Weekend Warrior Program.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, that's one of the real advantages the Roving Radish has is it's allowed the county to use it as a platform for other programs. Well, the Weekend Warrior was started, I guess this will be our third season doing it, to help kids in the summer. There was a gap. In the summer, during the school year, a lot of kids can get food for the weekends through other programs.
Yeah.
So the school system does a great job of having open sites during the summer to get free lunch.
Absolutely.
I mean, what a service they're doing. We kind of work in conjunction with them and have picked five locations, schools, to provide snacks on Fridays. And when I see snacks, they're more like meals for the weekend. They're all easy to cook, usually microwavable, that we provide for kids on the weekends.
Are these also like local, you know, like the same type of idea behind the Robin Radish packets, that where they come from the local farms, or do you guys have to get a little more, I don't know,
what's the right process word?
Yeah.
Unfortunately. I mean, we try to, like, so we'll use tuna fish. We try to look for the healthy options that a kid could cook.
Okay.
Well, this week we're going to buy peaches from Larry Land and bring those. So, yes, we'll incorporate stuff like that, but the majority of it isn't because of just the nature of the product.
Right. And that's why I wanted to ask that question, because it's important to understand. And I think that some of us get too passionate almost about eating healthy and making it simple and this and that and the other. But we got to understand that there's also other challenges that some families may be facing. And even though they would like to go, you know, in a more proactive way and eating healthier, It might not be feasible at the time. So it's good to just keep reminding them and having these programs available and all this help available so that they can take at least small steps, right?
Right. Well, and if we want to, we want kids to be able to eat. That helps their development.
Yeah, it's
important. So the program's been very successful. We gave out last week about 410 snack packs.
Wow.
So really, really picking up. We're lucky we have great partners. It was actually started, and the idea came up from the Office of Community Resources. They came to us because we had, again, the platform, the infrastructure to do it.
Right.
So we've worked hand in hand with them, as well as we're really lucky the local children's board. That's where all the funding's come for the Weekend Warrior. So it's a great team effort, which is, I found most of the successful programs we have in the county, if you look at it's not just one.
It's partnerships.
Right. It's Office of Community Sustainability. It's Office of Community Resources. It's local Children's Board. There's groups working together to make it great.
And that's one of the strengths, I think, of Harris County that we've come to realize as different organizations and as we continue to try to help our community, is that the more we partner and the more we reach out to each other, the better results we're going to get.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and I say we because that's what the station is doing, and obviously that's what you're sitting here today with
that's
us.
Right.
Because we're trying to get this information out to people. We see the great work that people are doing in our community, and we want everybody to know about it. So, the Weekend Warrior, do families need to sign up ahead of time, or is, you know, are there specific times, specific locations? Where do we find all this information?
So it's all actually online, but and the school system has it up as well. You don't have to sign up. It's a first come, first serve basis. We have a spot at Swansfield Elementary School from 11 to noon, or 11:30 to noon, I'm sorry. That's the only short one that we have. Most of them will be an hour. We have from 11:30 to 12:30, Oakland Mills Middle School, and I believe it's, I might mix the times up, but Duckett's Lane as well.
Okay.
And then we have from 1 to 2, we have the East Columbia Library, as well as Deep Run Elementary School. But tell everybody to check the lines, because I'm going from my memory of the time.
Yeah. So
it's every Friday, and they just show up.
Okay.
They do have to fill out a quick survey.
Okay.
And then, boom, they get it back.
And the best way where they can go and verify the times and the places, then, is the website for Howard County Public Schools?
Where I would look, yes, because they do have it up there. And we also have it on our website as well.
Okay, fantastic. Now, you said, you know, the Robin Radish, I think we've kind of covered most of what the program is and the meals, and we've given everybody, like, a good feel of it. But you said you also continue to be busy throughout the year, and you have other programs that you kind of mentioned through the other work that you do. So do you mind going a little bit more in detail on those?
That's what actually makes the job exciting. So our office and myself run the Agricultural Preservation Board. That got developed. That was the Agricultural Land Preservation Board, run by zoning and Joy Levy, who's done a wonderful job of preserving land in the county. What we looked at and what was done a year ago was they said, hey, we're preserved a lot of this land. We still need Joy Levy to help with that, because she's got all the expertise. There's a lot of ins and outs that she helps the farmers with. But they wanted to expand the role of that board to look at how can we sustain farming as a living. Because actually that agricultural preserve land doesn't mean it's preserved to do agriculture on, but that doesn't mean it has to. So it's not like you preserve your land and you say you're going to farm it. It has to be preserved. It can be an agricultural preservation and not necessarily farmed. So it's important for us to sustain farming as a livelihood.
So just so we understand that a little bit better, it could be preserved as a farming area but not be farmed. Does it have to – what does that mean? So it cannot be built on? Is that what that mean? Or
yes.
Can they do something else if it's not farming? Like,
so they can. There are certain things. So when agricultural preservation, basically what a farm's doing there is they're selling their development rights. So they're not selling necessarily. That's what they're selling right there.
Hmm.
They're saying, I can't develop for housing. There are certain things they can do with tenant houses and things like that. They're also conditional uses. So we hear conditional use. Solar is one of them that they can do to a certain percentage right now that we hear a lot about in the news. There's, you know, you could have a blacksmith shop. There's small little items. And the reason we have conditional uses for agricultural preservation properties is to sustain the farm. That's, I think, the real goal of it.
Okay.
So that's the basis behind
it. So you almost have like two separate goals, is to preserve the land, but also to preserve farming itself.
Right. And that's why the board was expanded and that our Office of Community Sustainability came in, and we work with Joy Levy at DPZ. And everybody at DPC, who are great for the agricultural community, in my opinion.
So why do we want to preserve farming? Why is it important that we continue to produce our own local, you know, tomatoes and grow our own local vegetables and fruits? I mean, you said earlier, right? It's cheaper to go many times buy it at a grocery store because they buy in bulk, even though it takes longer for them to arrive here. So why do we want to preserve farming?
Well, there's a lot of reasons. One is, it's better for our environment. We don't have to travel the stuff as far. By having farms here, we really have created great open spaces. We also, it's from an educational standpoint that our kids don't have to travel far to see farm and see how it really works.
Yeah.
I mean, it's important for them to understand where their food comes from. Also from a security level. You know, you don't want all your eggs in one basket. You just don't want one area to create, you know, have all the food.
Right.
So there's a lot of reasons. It's also good for our economy. Farmers, especially here, we have a lot of horses, obviously, a lot of horse farms. And everybody says, well, is that really farming? Well, it is, but it also supports the guys that grow hay. That it's a whole industry, and it creates a great economic driver for our community as well.
All the things that get set in motion that we don't think about,
right?
Yeah, so
it's not just food. It's not just food.
It's a lot of
it's the soybeans, it's the hay, it's the corn, it's all the commodities. We're also, we have a lot of unique things in Howard County. We also have a micro malter here in Howard County on Route 97, and he buys grain from our farm. So it's this network that's important for us to keep intact.
And, you know, you mentioned, you kind of mentioned a little bit the taste of the food, and it's, you know, not having to be shipped and sitting, you know, in a fridge for so long. It really makes a difference.
Oh, absolutely.
It really makes a difference. I'm from Ecuador originally. So I grew up, one thing that really took me by surprise is that people here would eat just fresh green peppers and celery, because when you have it fresh, you know, in Ecuador, and you put it in your mouth, the taste is so strong that it's hard to keep it in your mouth, right? But because it's traveled so far, the taste is not as strong anymore. Here you can. You can just dip it in something and have it like that. So that was a big shock, you know, culture shock for me. Tomatoes also taste very different. And I think that's the one thing that people can really, and where people can really kind of like make that distinction, because if you take a tomato that you bought at the supermarket and you take one that you bought from a local farmer, you're going to see a difference on the texture, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And you're really going to taste a difference. I mean, you're really, the moment you put the tomato in your mouth, it's just, the fresh one is just, taste, you know, what the tomato tastes like. I mean, I don't know how to explain it, but the taste is just there.
It's because it's ripened differently, too. That's like when you get a lot of, but not all grocery store tomatoes are this way, but some of them would be picked green, and then they're gassed to make turn red.
Right.
So when you get one from a farmer here locally, they're not doing that. They'll pick them. They may set them out on a table. We used to always do that. Spread them all out so they could ripen and then package them. But it's a different flavor when it's ripened on the vine kind of thing.
I think that fresh food tastes a lot better.
Oh, absolutely.
When you can just like almost like get your hand out of the window and just grab it
into your mouth.
It makes a difference.
it definitely does.
Makes
it
a big difference. Does. We're running out of time here in our morning show, but are there any closing thoughts, anything that you want to just, you know, tell our listeners before we wrap our conversation up today?
Well, you know, I appreciate all your guys' time and talking with us. It's always good to get the word out about our program. We don't do a ton of marketing, so anytime we get a chance to talk about it, we jump at it. But I think the message would be just to support local farms any way you can. And to the healthy eating standpoint, you don't have to buy our meal kits to eat healthy. You can look at our recipes. You can take them offline. Our goal is for people to eat healthy. It doesn't necessarily mean they have to buy from us. So there's a lot of good avenues for that.
So take a look at the Robbing Radish. It's a really neat, interesting, and unique program that allows, like James was saying, you know, to support local farms, to promote healthy eating, and to connect our community in so many ways. And if you're looking for volunteer opportunities, there's still open spots. It's a program that runs from May through November. So check it out. Definitely check it out. You guys have a little cart even that looks almost like a radish.
It does. It does. We got two of them. Yeah, that's right.
So look out for the cart, you know, and reach out to James. Can we just share your information again?
Sure.
With everybody?
Sure. My email is jzoller, Zoller, @howardcountymd.gov.
So if you have questions or if you just want to find out more about the program, reach out to James and he'll be happy to answer your questions. James, thanks so much for coming into our studio today. We really appreciate it.
Great. Thank you.
Everybody have a wonderful day. We will be back tomorrow and enjoy your Monday.
Stay cool.
Stay cool. Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.